The occasion of the 51st Psalm is of course referred to in the title, when Nathan said to David, "Thou art the man." The penitential Psalms make it clear that after David's dreadful fall, involving both corruption and violence, adultery and murder, David's conscience was smiting him. But in his remorse and misery, he refused to confess. And in fact, he was fighting against it. But whenever Nathan said to him, "Thou art the man," David's defenses came down. The pricks became an intolerable wound. And he was brought to his knees in confession. We have no greater record of deep, profound, unreserved confession and repentance than in the 51st Psalm. We've been reminded that David speaks of transgressions, iniquity, sin, evil, blood guiltiness. He speaks of a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart. And in moving language, David appeals to the loving kindness of his God and to the tender mercies of his God. Not forgetting, of course, that in all matters, God must be justified. I would like us to look at the psalm in the following way. In verses 1 and 2, we have David's desire. And we notice that the emphasis in this section is upon me and my. And it's against the background of the loving kindness and the tender mercies of God. Says David, "Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from mine iniquities. Cleanse me from my sin." In verses 3 and 4, we have David's confession. And we notice now the emphasis upon thee and thou. Against thee, and thee only have I sinned, and done evil in thy sight. Thou mayest be justified. Thou speakest. Thou judgest. If David's desire in verses 1 and 2 is on the ground of divine kindness and divine mercy, David's confession in verses 3 and 4 is in the light of God's righteousness. Notice what he says in verse 4, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest and be clear when thou judgest. Then in verses 5 and 6, we have David's discovery. Notice the word "behold" with which both of these verses commence. And because of that, I speak of it as a discovery. And what was his twofold discovery? Verse 5, what he inherited from his mother. Like all men, he belonged to a corrupt stock. Number 2, verse 6, what his God nevertheless required, truth in the inward parts. Verses 7 and 8, we have David's confidence. And I love David's confidence here. He says in verse 7, purge me, and I shall be clean. Verse 7, wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Verse 8, make me that the bones may rejoice. David's confidence. Verses 9 to 13 were David's plea for restoration and David's concern for others. We discover that David's restoration involved three matters. The past. His past sins. Verse 9, hide thy face from my sins. Verse 9, blot out all mine iniquities, David's past. Then the future involving a clean heart. Notice the threefold reference to the Spirit. Verse 10 speaks of a right spirit, a steadfast spirit. Verse 11, a spirit of holiness. Verse 12, a free or a willing spirit. Almost interesting. Then we have David's concern for others. Verse 13, I will teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee, and sinners shall return unto thee. Notice now that the Lord and the things of the Lord are David's chief concern. Thus in verse 9 he says, thy face. Verse 11, thy presence. Verse 11, thy holiness, as possibly it might read. Verse 12, thy salvation. Verse 13, thy ways. And sinners shall return unto thee. Then in verses 14 to 19, we have David's plea for renewal and the lessons that he himself had learned. And thus, with a soul delivered from blood guiltiness, verse 14, his tongue would sing aloud, and notice, of the Lord's righteousness. Rather an amazing statement. The Lord's righteousness. Verse 15, and his plea was that the Lord would open his lips and his tongue would show forth the Lord's praise. The Lord's righteousness and the Lord's praise. And the lesson the psalmist had himself learned. What was this? Verse 14. What the Lord does not desire, sacrifice. Verse 16. What the Lord does not delight in, burnt offering. Verse 17. What God will not despise, a broken spirit and a broken and a contrite heart. Verse 19, what God will be pleased with, then shalt thou be pleased with the sacrifices of righteousness, burnt offering and whole burnt offering, then shall they offer bullocks upon thine altar. Now let's think of the details of some of these things. Verses 1 and 2, David's desire. In his deep desire for divine forgiveness, David can only make an appeal to God's grace. He says, have mercy upon me. That might be read, be gracious unto me. If God will be gracious to David, it must be according to God's loving kindness and the abundance of his tender mercies. The fact of the matter was just this, that David could not claim divine grace on the ground of any moral right, or even the ground of any official greatness. It must be according to God's loving kindness and the abundance of his tender mercies. And says David in verse 1, blot out my transgression. As we were reminded, transgression involves willful defection, a deliberate stepping over of the line of divine prohibition. On more than one count had David transgressed. Hence the words in the plural. Blot out my transgressions. He had committed adultery and he had killed. Hence it's blot out my transgressions. His plea to God, that he may blot them out and eradicate, as we've been reminded, from God's book. Blot them out, eradicate them from thy book. Verse 2, wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity. And as we've been reminded, iniquity conveys the thought of self-will, self-expression in perverting what is of God. And David's plea was that God might truly wash his mind from self-will. Oh God, wash my mind completely and fully from self-will, from self-gratification, the self-gratification of my past failure. Oh God, Wash my mind fully from it. As a brother, as Flanagan has reminded us, as one with scrupulously rinsed, soiled garments, paying attention to every fiber. Verse 2, cleanse me from my sin. Sin involving a wandering or a missing of the mark. And David's plea was just this, that as the leper was pronounced clean and fit for the comfort of home and the company of friends, he too might be cleansed and fitted for fellowship once again. Verse 3 and 4, David's confidence. Verse 3, David acknowledges, or rather verses 3 and 4, David's confession. In verse 3, David acknowledges the sin was all his own. As we've been reminded, David would not blame anyone else, and acknowledges it was continually before him. In fact, it was plaguing him. Verse 4, the psalmist realizes that his deep and sincere confession of guilt and the fact that his sin was a sin against God was a necessary vindication of God if he must be forgiven. Said the psalmist, not only have I sinned, but my sin is evil in thy sight. And while it is true I sinned against Bathsheba and committed two sins against her husband Uriah and a sin against my own family and as a king against mine own nation, yet I have done what thou didst command me not to do. I've turned my back on thee. In that moment of weakness, O God, I flouted thy law. I scorned thy holy nature. Listen to it. Against thee. The only have I sinned and done that which is evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest. What does this mean? Simply this, that whatever thou mightest say, or whenever thou mightest speak, thou art faultless. I confess my evil before thy holy name, that thou mightest be faultless. And be clear when thou judgest. And what does that mean? Simply this. Should anyone dare to dispute with thee, thou must prevail. For thy forgiveness was not granted without my deep contrition and my deep confession. And we notice that in David's confession, it's thee, thou and thy, and we'll not stop to speak of that. Now, verses 5 and 6 with David's discovery, it was twofold. As we've seen already, he was of a corrupt stock, and he discovered God's requirement. Verse 5, behold, in iniquity, in perversity was I brought forth, and in sin did my mother conceive me. In effect, what David is saying is just this. There is something deeper than my sinful acts. I was born with, I inherited a corrupt nature. And that's true of all mankind. For let us remember, there was no one born in Eden's garden. There was no one born in innocence. All children were born this side of Eden's garden, and none were born in innocence. Every child of Adam was brought forth in iniquity and conceived in sin. Verse 5 says David, behold, thou desirest truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden part thou shalt make me to know wisdom. I wonder what David means. Simply this. Because sin is inherited, and deep-seated. Much more is required than forgiveness. God must deal with the inward parts. God must deal with the hidden part. Truth in the inward parts. No evil, no error, only steadfast integrity. In contrast to iniquity. In contrast to perversity. And wisdom in the hidden part. Wisdom to discern between right and wrong. Good and evil. Not simply to know, but the wisdom to make right decision. So as not to sin. So as not to miss the mark. In contrast to being conceived in sin. Then verses 7 and 8, David's confidence. Verse 7, if thou wilt purge me with hyssop, I shall be clean. Our brother Flanagan has pointed out this word purge is an interesting word. It means to purge from sin. It comes from the root to sin. Thus to purge simply means to purge from sin. But how? Well, David mentions hyssop. And David's mention of hyssop is significant. Whether it be on the Passover night, Exodus 12, or the cleansing of the leper, Leviticus chapter 14, or the red heifer, Numbers 19, the use of hyssop is always connected with blood. It is true, of course, that in Numbers chapter 19, the hyssop was dipped in water. But then it was dipped in the ashes of the sacrifice. And you remember that in Numbers chapter 19, the red heifer was the only sacrifice in which the blood was burnt. Thus the ashes were a testimony to the blood of a victim. And the water in the ashes indicates the application by the Spirit of the blood itself. Thus hyssop is always connected with blood. And says David, then I shall be clean. Then I shall be pure. But David goes on to say, wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. If purge with hyssop, relates to the application of blood. Wash me, relates to the application of water. Wash me with the water of the word. And wash me from the glaring guilt of my sin. And that sin will be taken away. And I shall be whiter than snow. I wonder why David does this. My dear brethren, David was fully aware that no sacrifice could be offered for his high-handed, presumptuous sin, according to Numbers 15, that in fact, death was what he deserved. Death was in fact the award. But here David, in deep contrition, he appealed to the mercy of God, that God would apply the benefits of a sacrifice to him upon his confession. Blood and water. Verse 8. That the bones which thou hast broken may rejoice. Why should the psalmist mentally and physically, my sin has shattered me. Our brother has reminded us of that. Psalm 32, when I kept silence, my bones waxed old through my roaring all the day long. For day and night thy hand was heavy upon me. My moisture is turned into the drought of summer. And says David, only when I know thy cleansing through blood and water, and enabled once again to hear the joy and gladness of thy people at the various feasts, will the bones that thou hast broken rejoice. Verses 9 to 13, David's plea for restoration and David's concern for others. There's a question of his past sin. He would no longer dread its punishment. Thus verse 9, David says, as for my sins, hide from them thy face of anger. As for all mine iniquities, blot them out of thy book of remembrance. Number 2, there's the question of future restoration.
involving three matters.
Number one, create in me a clean heart, O God.
Brethren, this is important.
Create in me, O God, a heart that will continue to make me feel the evil of my past failure and make me never again to desire it. Create in me a clean heart. And coupled with this, a right spirit, a steadfast spirit. Renew a right or a steadfast spirit within me. That is, a spirit not easily swayed when temptation might assail. Firmly resolved to pursue only what is good. Thus coupled we have a clean heart and a steadfast spirit. Verse 11 again. Cast me away from thy presence. In other words, says David, let not henceforth anything come between thee and me. O God, I want to know thy presence and to enjoy thy favor. And coupled with this, the continued promptings of a spirit that inspires to holiness. Our brother Flanagan has referred to Mr. Darby's rendering, and take not the spirit of thy holiness from me. And while I believe that reference is made to David's own spirit, yet there is involved the promptings of the Spirit of God in the matter of creating holy aspirations. What then do we find? Number one, communion with God and a spirit of holiness. Verse 12, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation, the joy of thy salvation that I've lost. O God, I desire to have it restored. And couple this, to be held by a free or a willing spirit. Mr. Darby renders this, and let a willing spirit sustain me. My dear Christian friend, joy in God's salvation and a willing spirit, they go together. God delights in willing service, as was the case in the tabernacle, the wise-hearted and the willing-hearted. Now what does he hear this evening? Not only does God find pleasure in a willing spirit, but that sustains the child of God. When he or she has a willing spirit, after all, what is done grudgingly gives God no pleasure, is a sure recipe for formalism, legality, and a breakdown. Thus we've coupled together here restored joy and a willing spirit. Then we have David's concern for others, verse 13. Then will I teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee. If I have, says David, by my great sin, caused others to transgress, I will teach them thy ways. I will teach them thy ways of guidance, and thy ways of restoration. And sinners shall be converted to thee in the blessedness of thy restoring grace and the joy of a renewed spirit. I want to see others brought back to thee when they were converted. Strengthen thy brethren. Now let me repeat what I said in my introductory remarks regarding David's absorbing concern with the things of the Lord. Thy face, thy presence, thy holiness, thy salvation, thy ways, and sinners returning unto thee. David's absorbing interest and concern about the things of the Lord. Verses 40 to 19, David's plea for renewal
and the lessons that he himself had learned. Renewed in spirit, communion restored, it is now the matter of me and thou. I love that. Renewed in spirit, communion restored, says David, O God, it's now the matter of me and thou. In the language of Amos, how can two walk together except they be agreed? Notice the language, verse 14. Thou God of my salvation. My tongue shall sing aloud of thy righteousness. O Lord, open thou my lips, and my mouth shall forth thy praise. It's me and thee. They're agreed, and they're walking together. And in verse 14, for the first time, David specifies his sin and speaks of the enormity of it. Notice what he says. Deliver me from blood guiltiness. David has not in his mind here the blood of warfare. Now, does David have in his mind any personal desire for revenge? He thinks only of Uriah's blood. Demanding his own punishment. In fact, David sees justice pursuing him. And about to apprehend him, he cries to be delivered. David has given up the flight from justice. And on the ground of specific and contrite confession, he casts himself upon God's mercy for deliverance. Notice the language of verse 14, the God of my salvation. In the joy and relief of God's salvation, his tongue, which had lost its song, would sing again, and sing aloud, and remarkably, of God's righteousness. Not his mercy, but God's righteousness. While no sacrifice had been made, nor could be offered, David was confident in God's recognition of his appeal to the blood of purging and the cleansing of water of verse 7. David was confident. Confident God not despising his broken spirit and his broken and contrite heart. In other words, says David, if God has righteously chasten me, that God would just as righteously deliver me. God would righteously deliver him, and a new song would be in David's mouth. Now in verse 15, David cries to the Lord to open these lips of his. Lips that not only had his sin closed, but his pride had refused to open in confession. They were closed. Psalm 32, when I kept silence, my bones waxed old through my roaring or my groaning all the day long. After the silence of obstinacy and the groaning of guilt, his open lips would show forth to others the praise of a pardoning God. Who is a pardoning God like thee? Or was grace so rich and free? The lessons that David learned were these. Verse 16. The Lord desired not sacrifice. Delighted not in burnt offering. Verse 17. God would not despise a broken and a contrite heart. Now what do these verses mean? They've caused a bit of confusion in thought and interpretation. There's of course the teaching that David is acknowledging that for his high-handed sin, according to Numbers chapter 14, he couldn't offer a sin offering. No provision had been made for that. That in fact, God will only accept a crushed and a contrite heart. Is that of which David is speaking here? Let us observe that in connection with what is mentioned here, none of the expressions used refer to offerings for sin. They're all worship offerings. Verse 16 and 17, David speaks of the sacrifice. And brethren, this is the language of the peace offering. Leviticus chapter 3, the sacrifice of peace offering. And let me remind you, the peace offering wasn't offered to obtain peace. It was offered out of an enjoyment of peace. Then David speaks in verse 16 of the burnt offering. And of course, that speaks for itself. That was the great worship offering. Now, brethren, listen to this. There are two reasons given in the Psalms as to why God does not desire nor find delight in sacrifices, burnt offerings, and offerings for sin. Psalm 40, quoted in Hebrews chapter 10, the teaching is this. By way of comparison with their fulfillment in Christ, they could never fully accomplish God's will. That's one reason. The Psalm 51 is the other reason, that the offering of peace offering and burnt offering becomes only mere ritual if there is unconfessed sin. And the offering of worship never in itself covers sin. And these are tremendously important matters. Hence, in these circumstances, God does not desire it and finds no pleasure in them. David could not make restitution for Uriah's life, but God would accept and not despise a crushed spirit, a crushed and a contrite heart. Then in verses 18 and 19, here I close with the two verses that close the psalm under the nature of a prayer. It has been suggested that when this psalm was included in Israel's songbook, this psalm was incorporated in Israel's collective worship, and these last two verses, in fact, were added. Possibly, after the return from the captivity, to stir up the people to build Jerusalem's walls, and to show to them the way of recovery, the way to offer sacrifice of righteousness, not just offered in ritual, but from hearts that were right before God. They must have, like David himself, the heart and spirit that God will not despise. Listen to what these verses say. Do good in thy good pleasure unto Zion. Build thou the walls of Jerusalem. Then shalt thou be pleased with sacrifices of righteousness, with burnt offering and whole burnt offering. Then shall offer bullocks upon thine altar.